Henry J. Heinz, the man who invented tomato ketchup.
I always loved growing and selling vegetables. I worked at other professions, but I always returned to my garden. I never imagined that a simple tomato sauce would have such an impact on the world. I was born on the 11th of October, 1844, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the USA. And I was the first of eight children. My parents named me Henry John Heinz, a name I later used for my company, H.J. Heinz. 4 years before my birth, my parents had emigrated to the USA from Bavaria in Germany. In the beginning, life was difficult for them, as they did not speak English. However, they had come to America to work hard and create a better life for themselves and their family. And that is what they did. In 1850, we moved to a town 8 kilometers from Pittsburgh called Sharpsburg. My father, John Henry, had a brickyard, a place where bricks used in construction work were made and sold. On one side of the brickyard, there was some spare land that my father did not use. And on it, my mother, Anna Margareta, grew all of our fruit and vegetables. I learned a great deal from my mother and father. They worked hard, saved their money, and sent me to school to make sure I had a good education. When I was 14, my parents wanted me to become a priest, and they even enrolled me in a special school. They were both religious people, and they were members of a type of Protestant church. However, this was not the career I wanted to follow. I think I had a natural talent for business because when I was 8 years old, I started selling my mother's vegetables to our neighbors. By the time I was 12, I was growing vegetables on a piece of land that measured more than 14 square meters. I had a long list of customers, some were even as far away as Pittsburgh. 2 years later, I did a couple of classes in accounting at a school called Duff's Mercantile College, which was the first business school in America. My mother had started making different kinds of pickles. These were vegetables that had been kept in either vinegar or salt water for a few months. They developed a strong flavor from the vinegar or salt and became really tasty. I also sold these to the customers we already had, and by selling in the streets, our customer list grew. In 1859, when I was 15, I stopped taking classes at school and went to work with my father at the brickyard. I continued growing and selling vegetables and pickles, but I also started a little business all of my own. One of the vegetables we grew was a small plant called horseradish, whose roots had a strong, spicy taste. It was possible to make a white sauce from the roots, which was very good when eaten with roast beef. I started selling my horseradish sauce along with the other vegetables. I was not the first person to sell horseradish sauce, but mine was presented in a different way. Until now, all the other sellers of the sauce put it into dark glass bottles so that you couldn't see what was inside. Some of the manufacturers had a bad reputation because pieces of other, cheaper vegetables and even small pieces of wood had been found in their sauces. I put my sauces into transparent glass jars so the customer could see exactly what they were buying. Almost overnight, my horseradish sauce and pickles became amazingly popular. In 1865, with the money I had made from selling horseradish sauce and the wages I was earning, I bought half of my father's business. The population of towns like Sharpsburg and Pittsburgh was growing, and people needed new houses to live in. It was a good time to be making and selling bricks. 3 years later, one of my friends called Clarence Noble also became a partner in the brickyard. It was a profitable business, but I felt that for me, something was missing, and I knew that I didn't want to stay at the brickyard permanently. I missed growing vegetables and making pickles and horseradish sauce. So Clarence and I went into a different business. In 1869, we started the Anchor Pickle and Vinegar Works. In addition to our horseradish sauce, we also produced pickled cucumbers and celery sauce. The following year, we changed the name of our company to Heinz Noble and Company. It may sound rather impressive, but in reality, it was quite simple. I decided that I did not want to wait for customers to come to me. Instead, I went into the streets and sold our products from a cart that was pulled by a horse. By taking our products to the people, we got direct feedback without the need of a market researcher with a questionnaire. Every day, we talked with the local people. None of our customers was rich, and they spent their money carefully. So it was important for me to provide quality products that were also healthy. The other important thing I did in 1869 was to get married. My wife, Sarah Sloan Young, was also from a family of immigrants. Hers had come to the USA from Ireland. Everyone called her Sally. We started our family quickly, and over the next 15 years, we had 5 children, Irene, Clarence, Howard, Robert, and Clifford. Little Robert was our 4th child, but sadly he died a month after he was born. In 1872, my partner Clarence and I went to the Philadelphia Fair to present our pickles and sauces, which people seemed to like. Back home, we had also started selling sauerkraut, cabbage that had been chopped into small pieces and stored in salt, which had a delicious sour taste. Our business continued to do well until 1873, when the whole country suffered from a financial crisis that resulted in an economic depression. After the end of the American Civil War, the construction of the railroad, the railway system, became the second largest industry in the country. The largest was agriculture. Between 1866 and 1873, more than 56,000 kilometers of railway track was laid across the country. A banking company called J. Cook & Company had invested huge amounts of money in the railroad. They had also paid for railway tracks that were going to be put on land that was not yet ready for construction. Either it still belonged to private individuals and hadn't yet been bought by the government, or the necessary preparations on the land had not been made. This meant that the company had to wait a long time before it could make any profit. Having spent all their money buying construction materials, there was no money to pay salaries and the other expenses a company has, and they started to get in debt. It soon became impossible for them to keep the company open, and on the 8th of September, 1873, they declared that they were bankrupt, that they did not have enough money to pay their debts. Many other companies lost money too, and also became bankrupt. In just 2 years, 18,000 companies closed, and unemployment rose to 14%. Now that so many people had no work and very little money, they stopped buying our products. In 1875, we had debts of $170,000, and we had to declare ourselves bankrupt. We had lost everything, our investment and our income, and it was a huge shock. However, instead of allowing the situation to defeat me, I proposed a solution. On the 1st of January, 1876, I called the members of my family to attend a meeting. I wanted to start another business. But if you have declared yourself to be bankrupt, you cannot have another business in your name. I asked my brother John and our cousin Frederick and his wife two things. Firstly, I asked if they would lend me the money to start a new company. And secondly, I asked if they would be the official owners. They agreed, and the new company was called F&J Heinz. Although legally I was the manager and not one of the owners, in reality the company was mine, and I started work with a new sense of confidence and enthusiasm. A new company has to have a new product, and I decided to make a tomato sauce, or ketchup, as I called it. There are two theories explaining where the name ketchup came from. The first is that the word ketchup was used in China by the people who spoke a type of Chinese language called Amoy to describe the salt water that types of fish were preserved in. The second is that it came from Malaysia, where it was called ketchup. It's likely that both stories are true. In the late 1690s, samples of the liquid arrived in England, and people there soon started using it to preserve local types of fish and shellfish. They called it ketchup, or catsup. I decided to base my new tomato ketchup on old recipes that used vinegar with cooked tomatoes. Explorers in South America had brought tomatoes to Europe. Then they were brought to North America by the Europeans who came to live here, particularly the Italians, who had started to use tomatoes in their cooking. In the 18th and even the early 19th centuries, people in Northern Europe thought that tomatoes were poisonous. The tomato plant belonged to a group of plants called nightshade, or belladonna, which, because they were poisonous, were famous for being used to commit murder. Naturally, people did not want to eat them. However, the French found a way to make a sauce from tomatoes that people were not afraid to eat. It was very tasty, but it was quite complicated to make and took a long time. I discovered that, in fact, I could easily make a simple tomato sauce using natural ingredients that were easy to find. There was a good supply of tomatoes, and so I started production of my tomato ketchup. People liked it and demanded more, and it became an instant success. Tomato ketchup is still a favorite in many countries. And to this day, more of it is sold than anything else that is made by Heinz. Soon, the company was selling so much ketchup that it started to make a profit. With the money that was coming in, we were able to add other products, like applesauce and pepper sauce, to our list. And we started selling sauerkraut in metal cans. As the economy improved, sales continued to increase. As a result, we were able to put our profits back into the company and employ more people. By the time the depression caused by the financial crisis ended in 1879, We had made a profit of $15,000, and we were able to pay off some of the company's debts. In 1886, I went on a trip to Europe with my children. I had wanted to take my wife, Sally, with me, but she was ill and couldn't travel. In London, I visited a shop called Fortnum & Mason that sold quality exotic food products to rich people. I managed to get an interview with the manager and was able to persuade him to try 7 of my sauces and pickles. He liked them and immediately agreed to sell all 7 products. We also visited Germany, where I met some of my relatives for the first time. While I was in Germany, I also visited several factories and was impressed by the way they looked after their employees. I decided that when I returned to the USA, my employees would have the same benefits as the German workers. In 1888, F&J Heinz was doing so much business that I was able to pay back the money I had borrowed. I was now legally allowed to own a company again, and I bought out my partners, my brother and cousin, so that I was the only owner. F&J Heinz became H.J. Heinz, and I started to expand. I built bigger and better factories in Pittsburgh, and our production increased. As company profits grew, I never forgot what my mother had taught me when I was a young boy. She always said that you should behave to other people in the way that you would like them to behave to you. I also remembered the factories I had seen in Germany that treated their employees well. In each of my factories, I employed a doctor, a nurse, and a dentist to look after the workers. There were roof gardens for them to go to in their breaks. As well as wanting to provide a pleasant work environment, I also wanted to make sure that there was no dirt or disease in our factories. I gave all employees uniforms and changing rooms, and showers were built for everyone to use. New items were added constantly to our list, and by 1892, there were more than 60 different H.J. Heinz products. One day, while I was on a train in New York, I saw an advertisement for a shoe company that said they had 21 styles. I thought this was impressive and decided that we should have something similar. For no particular reason, the number 57 came into my head. I liked the look and sound of the number. I got off the train and went into a cafe where I sat down and thought about an advertising plan. Within a week, there were newspaper advertisements and billboard signs up with our slogan, Heinz 57 Varieties. It was the start of a campaign to make Heinz a name that was known to everyone. At the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, we had a stall on the second floor. But when it opened in May, I didn't think that enough people were coming to see us. I decided we needed an advertising trick, and I designed a little green pickle, a very small cucumber, with the Heinz name pressed onto it, made into a badge that people could wear. By the time the exposition ended in October, we had given away more than 1 million pickle badges. Because of this, a newspaper started calling me the Pickle King. With a number 57 and a funny name, we became famous. The following year, I took my family on a tour of Egypt and Europe. We were away for 5 months. When we returned, my wife Sally became ill with pneumonia, a disease that affects the lungs and makes it difficult to breathe, and she died. We had been married for 25 years, and it was a great shock. Although I was terribly upset, I found that work helped to make me less sad, and I put all my energies into the company and our products. In 1895, we added a product to our list, baked beans, which became very popular. Beans were a cheap type of food that were full of protein, and we created a delicious tomato sauce to make them even better. A year later, in 1896, we opened our first international office in London and introduced Heinz 57 varieties to the British. In 1897, we developed our cream of tomato soup, which, as with all of our products, was made with only natural ingredients. In my view, a business should be a community of colleagues, their families, and their friends. So we invited the public to visit our factories and meet our employees. In the year 1900, we celebrated the new century in style. 20,000 people came to see how we made our products, and it gave them confidence in our work. Our employees were proud to show visitors around, and I, too, was proud of what we had built. I had my own philosophy about running a business. Instead of giving orders, I asked people for their opinion. I tried to build teams because I believed that sharing led to better ideas. I encouraged new methods of production, and I wasn't afraid to take a few risks. We tried to learn from mistakes and to improve what we were doing. I thought it was vital to respect everyone who worked in the company, not just the people with important positions. This meant listening to those who did the less interesting jobs and providing opportunities for everyone. Many of our senior people had been promoted from the most basic positions in the company. Strikes never happened at Heinz. Our employees were happy, and our customers satisfied. But all around, there was another danger. Some of our competitors did not have high standards of cleanliness, and some of them faced problems when their products were contaminated by dirt and disease. People became ill from eating certain products, and the whole industry was affected. In our factories, cleanliness had always been very important. But I started campaigning for a Pure Food and Drug Act, which then became law in 1906. Our efforts were recognized not just in the USA, but overseas. It was the start of our international development. In France, I received 2 gold medals for our production. And in 1905, we opened our first factory in England. Once again, customers supported our products. I made sure that the English factory was managed with the same caring principles that I insisted on in the USA. I wanted Heinz to be a place that people wanted to come and work in. And so our training and education programs were a priority. On the 14th of May, 1919, I died from pneumonia when I was 74 years of age. In my lifetime, we had built more than 20 factories that made Heinz products. But my company was not just about sales and profits. Its success was because of people and teamwork. And I knew that my son Howard would respect what I had achieved. I was sure that he would work with my high standards and would continue to bring Heinz 57 varieties to future generations.